It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at said Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning, Jill and Marshall.
Good morning.
Did you get a lot of snow there?
Another 6 inches, I'll bet.
Yeah,
I mean, bet. It all depends where you were. When you get to, I think you're okay in Millerton.
Yeah, in Falls Village, there was we had more snow originally than Millerton, but last night was snowing all the way home, and is still snowing.
Yeah, it's pretty much a bonus. Well, okay. Speaking of bonuses, Van in New Preston. Are there any chewing treats that it's safe to leave your dog with unsupervised? And before you say Nyla Bones, let me say that while I'm sure there's a reason for their popularity, none of my dogs have ever showed the slightest interest in them. I want to find something my border collie can play with when I have to leave him alone for a stretch, but even the heaviest marrow bone can get sharp corners after a couple of hours, and rawhide can be eaten down to a choking hazard-sized lump.
And Nyla Bones can, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's just you have to evaluate how strong of a chewer your dog is. Some dogs are just maniacal about chewing and can chew a Nyla Bone in half or into small pieces. So the only thing that I say that it is okay with, and this is for most dogs, is a Kong of appropriate size. And a Kong toy is a thick rubber toy that has a hole in the center that you can put treats in. And so it's not really something that your dog would play with, but be occupied with if it's filled with good stuff. So, you know, yogurt and peanut butter and little treats stuck in the yogurt, frozen, that's the kind of stuff that I use. I think there's some spray cheese type things that you can put in there, but I've never looked at the ingredients, and it's not something I would necessarily recommend. But you can put things inside, freeze it up, put it in the crate when you leave, and it's going to occupy your dog, I would guess, for, you know, I don't have a camera on them, but I think it probably would last for 20 minutes or so, depending on your dog and how good they are at getting the stuff out. Even the Kong, I would guess, depending on the dog, little pieces could be chewed off of it, although I've never seen one chewed up.
Okay.
But I wouldn't leave anything else, because anything else that is your dog's able to chew pieces off of is potentially swallowable.
Right. I have seen Kongs get, but maybe if it's the really thick ones.
Yeah, so you really have to, if you've got a German Shepherd, you need the big Kong, and it's big and thick and has room for lots of good stuff inside of it.
Yeah, or maybe give the Border Collie a size up, something that's...
Yeah, if you give them too, if it's too big for the dog, then their little tongue is going to go in there and clean out everything quicker. So
yeah,
I guess it's
that,
a judgment.
Right.
Yeah, it's a kind of a judgment call, but definitely don't go with one small enough that can be swallowed.
Right. All right, Cora in Newburg. Last year, my 4-year-old male cat, JC, tested positive for feline leukemia, but doesn't have any symptoms. My sister's also having some big life changes and has to rehome her cat, who is also positive for feline leukemia, but does have symptoms and is being treated. I'd like to help my sister out by adopting her cat, but the information out there is so confusing, we can't tell if it would put JC in danger to expose him to my sister's cat.
So this is a very kind thought to take in a cat who has leukemia, because they're not easy to place. They potentially could be contagious to another cat, although depending on the age of the cat, they do have some natural immunity to leukemia, and I'll go into that in a minute. But the biggest problem here, so JC is a cat who's positive for feline leukemia, but probably not shedding the virus in great amounts because he doesn't have symptoms. Then the sister's cat does have symptoms, so probably is shedding a lot of leukemia virus. that still doesn't put JC directly in danger because JC already has leukemia. But what it does do is it puts both of them in danger a little bit because you're introducing two cats. It's the stress. The stress is the problem. So the stress of introducing a new cat and the stress of a feline leukemia positive symptomatic cat going to a new home and being introduced to a new cat is pretty, it's going to be potentially a big problem as far as that cat getting sicker. Ideally, the cat would, you know, stay where she is, but if that's not possible, then maybe go to a home with no other cats and no other dogs, so it wouldn't be as stressful. Very difficult situation. It's hard enough to place a cat, you know, but to find someone with no other dogs or cats who's willing to take a feline leukemia-positive cat who's now needs to be treated can be very difficult.
Right. So of all the unappealing alternatives, if it is strictly a medical issue, let's say the sister just is going to move anyway, which is going to be really stressful for the cat.
Right.
If the cat is looking at stressful and stressful from a strictly medical standpoint.
Well, what I would do is adopt the cat, but keep the two cats separate until this new kitty is accustomed to the new home before you introduce the cats, and to make sure that he's stable with his disease. So, I mean, a couple of months confined into one bedroom is way less stressful than coming to a new home, having the run of the house, and having to work your way around another cat who has already lived there.
Right, and it may be less stressful if you are up for this, if Cora is up for this. It may be less stressful, basically, for the family, for the health of the sister, and for the cat who would be going to is going to have to go to a new environment.
Right, right. And as far as JC is concerned, you know, Cora's concerned about her cat, you know, any high stress time, prolonged time with stress is going to potentially make the leukemia worse, or if they're asymptomatic, bring out symptoms. That doesn't mean it will happen, but it is the potential. But if JC's a cat who's pretty laid back, and you bring your new cat in and keep the new cat in one room, you know, for a month or two, it may not be an issue. JC would have time to get used to him and potentially not be terribly stressed. Just in general, I wanted to say, if you were adopting a cat who has feline leukemia, you know, with symptoms, and then you've got a cat at home who doesn't have leukemia but has the vaccine, you know, they're fairly well protected if they're over the age of two, but you know, you're still taking a little bit of a chance even when your cat is vaccinated, because lots and lots and lots of virus is coming out of a cat who is feline leukemia positive who has symptoms.
All right. I think, though, that you have been much more helpful than some of that other information out there.
I hope so.
All right. Emily in Pittsfield, I'm glad this isn't my question because I would answer it a different way. I have a healthy young female cat. My next-door neighbor, who shares a back porch with me, has a male ferret called Bandit. To both of our surprise, our pets have shown interest in playing together, and we've had some fun watching them check each other out and even chase each other around. I don't know my neighbor that well, though, so I don't want to ask him if there's something my cat can catch from Bandit. Can you tell me? And, of course, my image is the cat catching Bandit, but never mind.
Cats and ferrets, especially young cats, will play with ferrets. And they can get along fine, absolutely. Pets do seem to recognize whether an animal is part of the family or not, unless it's a bird. cats will definitely try to get birds most of the time if it's a small bird or a rodent. So ferrets, the big problem with ferrets and cats playing together is sometimes the ferret will nip the cat in play, and cats can get very angry about that. But if you've got a young cat playing with a ferret for a couple of weeks and nothing's going on, typically they get more and more accustomed to each other. You have to make sure that the cat has some place to jump up in case she wants to get away from the ferret. But as far as contagious diseases, the only thing that comes to mind is influenza, so flu. Excuse me. Ferrets can, that was an appropriate cough for influenza, right? Ferrets can catch influenza from people, but ferrets can also are also susceptible to canine influenza, as are cats. So it would be a very slight chance. But if there are dogs living in both houses, then you know, the ferret could potentially be susceptible to influenza, and so could the cat. But that's not really something that is directly relatable to ferrets and cats. So there's nothing else that I can think of that is transferable. Ferrets are also susceptible to canine distemper virus, but cats are not. So I wouldn't be terribly concerned. Many people have ferrets and cats that live together and play together.
All right, so it might be fun for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ryan in Rhode Island, it's off-season, which means I get to take my two Dobies to the beach. They love to crunch on empty crab shells when they find them. Is that okay?
No, I don't think it's okay. The empty crab shells, I mean, there's a little sharp pieces of crab shell can really wreak havoc with the gut. So it may be apparent that they're crunching on them and not swallowing, but I wouldn't count on that. So I would try not to have them picking up the crab shells and maybe ingesting little pieces, and just by distracting them. So, you know, I see dogs at the beach that are carrying a ball around. So if you've got a dog who is interested in carrying a toy or a ball, that's helpful. And just distraction with maybe throwing a frisbee or throwing a ball. If that doesn't work and your dog is crunching and potentially eating because they taste fishy, you know, so there's no reason why they wouldn't swallow them, then even a basket-type muzzle wouldn't be a bad idea.
All right, so I wonder how long they've been doing that.
Yeah, so, you know, if it's a, probably not very long, I would guess, if it's a question. Otherwise, I guess most people wouldn't be concerned about it, but it could be potentially a problem. If they're going to crunch up the shell, it's probably not going to cause an obstruction, but little sharp pieces of things can cause problems in the stomach and also in the esophagus.
Right.
Which is... can be a real problem. They
that scratchy thing, and then you cannot explain to them what's going on. So that's
right. They get very upset and try to eat everything if their esophagus is irritated or burned or feels scratched. You know, then we're going to start eating sand and rocks and anything they can find.
Okay. Now, I'm sort of stuck on this next question. This is Blake in Manhattan.
Well, if you're stuck, I wonder if I can answer it.
You'll be able to answer it. I just
suspense.
I just worry about the human race. All right. I just read this article about fasting dogs. I'm quoting, "I like to fast my dogs once every week or two because most immune function is in the gut. If the dog's digestive system is continually digesting meals, there's no time for house cleaning, and the dog's immune system will suffer. The exception is puppies under 6 months of age." What are your thoughts on fasting an adult dog that isn't sick?
I don't think it's necessary. I think that it's probably pretty upsetting to the dog and stressful because they don't understand. Some dogs are used to that life, and they kind of go with the flow, and they're people that they with their people all the time, and they eat when their people eat, and it's no big deal. I don't think fasting is necessarily a bad thing, but emotionally, to try to fast a dog is probably not a good thing. The point here is, though, that your dog shouldn't be constantly digesting meals, that your dog should be given a reasonable meal in the morning and not treats all day long. So there should be a long period of time, potentially 10 hours during the day and maybe 14 hours at night, where the intestine, you know, has the food runs through in a normal gut pretty quickly. And so most of the intestine is empty. And I think that it is true that it's probably not good for dogs to eat constantly. They evolved as eaters, you know, they evolved. We have this. They have the same DNA as the wolf, and so these animals, as they evolved, were eating every 2 or 3 days. And so I would guess that it is not good for them to be eating all day long. Plus, you're getting spikes of insulin all day, which is not really good for your pancreas, excuse me, your digestive tract, and your inflammation, your general body inflammation. So I guess the point I'm making is that people tend to feed their dogs all day long, and it's not the the greatest thing. But depending on the dog, I don't think that you're going to get a great benefit from fasting. I know that with people, it makes them feel great at times if they can get through 24 hours without eating, but not something I would, that I know enough about the benefits of to recommend.
And the other thing that I just wonder, there's so much. You know, this is a quote. It's taken out of context. So we don't know what else is there and whether there are precautions. But I fear that this isn't necessarily an animal that gets treats all day long. But it's just, it's sort of an anthropomorphizing, if that's even the right word, of a situation. I know that there are a lot of pets who eat more than they, or are given more than they should be.
Mm-hmm.
I can only compare to my pets who, you know, who are starving at their meals and, you know, would really be horrified if...
if you didn't feed them,
they would revolt. I have enough trouble with, they would revolt.
Yeah, yes. So, I mean, if you're feeding an appropriate diet, an appropriate amount, then feeding twice a day is okay. I know, you know, many people do feed their dogs once a day, and the dogs are content. And I've got one dog who would be fine if I didn't feed him. He'd go back and lie down, and the other dog would go nuts.
Right.
And so I'm not sure that it is across the board that it's something I would recommend, because I don't see the huge benefits of it.
Right. And in terms of gut support, do you put dogs on a regime of probiotic ever, or
it is all about the, you know, it's all the immune function is all about the microbiome, which is the collection of bacteria in the gut. So if your dog has either a very stressful period of time or some dysfunction of their immune system or anything else in the body, then probiotics are recommended. There's no harm in doing it, but it may not be necessary. If your dog has an excellent microbiome and you have them on an excellent diet, probably not necessary to supplement with probiotics. But it, you know, it depends. It's a supplement that has only good things and nothing bad about it. So what the heck? Go ahead and do it. And nighttime, when the gut is not so full, overnight would be a good time to give the probiotics. But many people can't give it without the meal, so that's okay to do too.
All right, but it's just something. And as someone who used to take the dog's probiotics, should you stick to dog probiotics for dogs and cats, and human probiotics for humans?
I think that is it's somewhat debatable, but what I can tell you is what I use is the Nutramax product, and you've got to use something that has some research behind it, not have people just say, oh, I think that this would be best for dogs. So definitely there are probiotics for horses that are herbivores. There are probiotics for dogs and cats who are more carnivorous, and that makes a difference. They definitely have a bit of a different microbiome than people do. And you need to give the bacteria in a large enough volume to make a difference. So that's why I use the Nutramax product called Proviable, which it has a lot of research behind it. Otherwise, you're kind of shooting in the dark. So it's okay to give it. Is it going to be as helpful? It's okay to give the human probiotic or, you know, something that you're taking. But is it going to be as helpful? I'm not really sure. I can't answer that. Probably not. Giving a tablespoon of yogurt isn't making a dent in anything.
Right, and that's actually a really good point, because the number of people who, when I say, well, you need a probiotic, whether it's for a human or for a pet, it's like, well, but I have a spoonful of yogurt. It's like, oh, smash my head. All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon.
Thank you.
Always pleased with your wisdom. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.